after the mint matters, and there are several, so if you can relax. Mr. Knapp, you're here just for the 11 o'clock hearing, right?
That's right, Your Honor. I'm just here for the 11 o'clock.
Okay.
I didn't have any objection on the
hearing. All right, thank you. Okay, let's take the mint matters, and before everyone comes up, why don't we first take the, so we can get Mr. Bailey out of here, why don't we take the motion to approve terms of severance? All right. And let me say to Mr. New and your team, again, I greatly appreciate the notebooks. They're very helpful. And it's the law, as they say.
That's right.
It's what the rules require. All right. This is the trustee's motion to approve severance agreement. Why don't we start with you, Mr. New?
Good morning, Your Honor. David New on behalf of the trustee, and I have Mr. Calvert here with me.
Good morning.
The motion is fairly straightforward. It's essentially what the trustee is seeking is approval of terms of a retention bonus for an employee named Edward Chacone. Edgar. Edgar is critical to the ability of the trustee to wind up the facility in Dayton. He is, working 80 hours a week. He's really the man on the ground. And so losing Edgar would be a severe blow to the estate and, frankly, would put at risk the trustee's ability to vacate the Dayton premises on time. So the terms of the severance that are set forth, we're seeking approval under 503C3. I think the facts and circumstances of the case justify the severance. Really is a retention bonus. It calls it a severance payment in the document, but it really is a retention payment.
Mm-hmm.
The one objection that was received was from Mr. Atala, who has objected on the grounds that we have proposed to pay his severance payment as an administrative priority claim rather than $100. That matter is set for trial in early August. I don't know that his objection, frankly, is relevant to the issue of whether Mr. Chacon's retention bonus should be approved. I think they're apples and oranges. Mr. Atala's really is a severance payment. And that matter is already set for resolution before the court. So there's no need for the court to resolve it in order to approve.
But I understand the objection is really just to the timing of the payment. I don't think Mr. Atala is actually objecting to the approval of the agreement itself. So what do you say to that?
Well, Mr. Chacon needs to be paid. So, the reality is this is a retention bonus. He is there working. I think there is a risk that he would not continue to work if this money doesn't get paid. So I think it is appropriate to pay it now.
Okay. I will have a few more questions, but let me hear it from Mr. Bailey first. Thank you, Mr. Newman. Mr. Bailey, yes.
Mr. Atala does not oppose the severance package, retention bonus, whatever you want to call it, with Mr. Chacon. There is a bit of concern that that money's being paid before the services are actually performed, but we have no reason to believe. Well, we have no reason to believe either that Mr. Chacon will leave if he's not paid this extra money, or that he won't perform the services if he's actually paid in advance. Presumably, if he is paid in advance, the agreement, and then doesn't perform the services, the agreement requires him to return the funds if they can be collected from him. I just want to point out, Your Honor, I didn't want this motion to go uncommented on, given the current status of the dispute between the estate and Mr. Atala. We've been here before. The precise same rationale, the precise same statutory standard was asserted by the trustee back in December of 2016 at docket 857, the motion to approve employment of Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Atala. The same thing. And the only difference between these two situations is that Mr. Atala has completed his services and Mr. Chacon has not. So I guess what the trustee is saying is that, well, we're done with Atala, so we can throw him aside and not pay him the severance payment that we promised to pay him, that the court approved as part of a court order. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I think the court should be concerned about that discrepancy. I think the trustee should be concerned about it, and I just wanted to point it out.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bailey. Mr. New, I have a few questions, many of them factual. What is the status of the Dayton premises?
So the Dayton premises right now, and Mr. Calvin can certainly correct me if my information is incorrect, but they're in the process right now of packing up the dyes, the records, and everything. It is the trustee's goal to be out of the Dayton premises by July 20th.
All right. And what is Mr. Chacon doing with regards to that effort?
And he is one of the few remaining employees left there, so he is actually physically the one who is, you know, loading the boxes on the pallets, packing the dyes. I mean, he's the labor force.
That doesn't require any institutional knowledge. Loading boxes and packing boxes, can't you get someone from Kelly's services to do that?
Well, it does take institutional knowledge, Your Honor, in the sense of also, you know, part of his job is locating items, locating records. So, for example, in the dye process.
That's what Ms., the woman who was the subject of the motion, is doing.
Ms. Baker as well.
Ms. Baker.
Right. Oh. They're both doing it, Your Honor.
Okay. Why? All right. I mean, not that I'm inviting more motions, but why is Ms. Baker willing to work without a retention bonus?
I don't know the answer to that.
It's more rhetorical. I mean, you kind of get where I'm going here. I'm. Where's a copy of the signed agreement? The motion that was filed had an unsigned agreement.
Do you have the signed agreement? Mr. Calvert says he has it, but it's not with him.
I'm sorry?
Mr. Calvert says he has it, but it's not with him.
Okay. According to Mr. Calvert's declaration, this agreement was entered into in early May.
Correct.
It's now July 6th. Why didn't I get a motion for approving this earlier?
Your Honor, we filed it as soon as Mr. Calvert brought it to our attention. We did not want to.
So why did Mr. Calvert sit on it, Mr. Calvert?
My attorneys had a number of issues ongoing at the time. I think this one fell through the cracks. It was provided to them at the time.
I stand corrected, Your Honor.
Getting to Mr. Bailey's argument, which is pretty straightforward, regardless of whether it's a retention bonus or a severance payment, it's an administrative expense claim that you're seeking allowance under Section 503C3, to be specific. Nothing in that subsection that I can see says that it's payments made pursuant to that subsection are entitled to priority over other administrative expense claims. Where retention bonuses are usually done at the beginning of the case when there's at least optimism that the case isn't administratively insolvent. We're now at the end of the case. You want to pay a bonus to someone to help wind down a failing operation. Just saying it out loud doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, you need to shut it down, and paying somebody a bonus to stick around to save an insolvent prospect doesn't make a lot of sense, just on its face.
I understand your concern, Your Honor. The trustee is in the process of shutting down that operation.
Right.
It's my understanding that Mr. Chacon had other job offers, which is how this agreement came to be. The trustee has deemed it critical to keep Mr. Chacon's services in order to wind up the facility in Dayton.
Well, again, that comes back to the question then, is why wait until now to seek approval of the agreement if it was critical to get it? If it was critical to Mr. Chacon to get assurances of his retention bonus, he's been working since early May. And apparently he's only got a couple more weeks. So you kind of got what you need from him. I mean, if I were to agree to it now, pretty much done. We're now just in the, like I said, a temp can come and pack up the boxes.
Well, I think there's more to it than just packing the boxes, Your Honor. And I would actually, you know, defer to Mr. Calvert's description of exactly what Mr. Chacon offers. But certainly with respect to the dyes, I have dealt with him extensively in trying to locate dyes, plasters, galvanos, and that institutional knowledge is necessary to return those dyes.
So what's going to happen after July 20? I mean, you're not going to have disposed of the dyes by then. Is he going to stick around?
So what's happening with the dyes, Your Honor, we're in the process of preparing a motion that should be filed in the next day or so. We're going to be filing a motion to sell those dyes to Metalcraft. Metalcraft has agreed that they will physically take those dyes and hold them essentially in trust, subject to the court's approval of a sale, so that way we can get them out of the facility.
Okay.
Your Honor, could I add
yes.
a word?
Yes, Mr. Bitt.
We really do support the payment to Mr. Chacon. I think it's necessary to have his services to wind down the facility efficiently. I also think that it's an appropriate part of the trustee's business judgment. I think that we need to carefully distinguish between retention bonuses and severance packages that are addressed to employees of the debtor, pre-petition employees of the debtor and executive managers. These are the people that were the target of the 2005 amendment to Section 503, whereas people who are hired by the trustee, by the estate, post-petition to come in that are otherwise strangers to the company, they stand on an entirely different footing. And if bankruptcy estates can't hire people and promise to pay them and then fulfill those promises, people simply won't work for bankruptcy estates. And I think that's going to be, that's a very damaging prospect if this becomes very uncertain.
Right. So that means your position is your client is in that latter category. And if his severance is not paid, that's going to lead to the, you know, parade of horribles, people not working. And I don't mean to demean the argument. Totally understand it. Seems, if I understand what you're saying, is that Mr. Chacon, who was a pre-petition employee, right? Your client,
I don't think my understanding of his position, he's not a pre-petition management employee. He was more like,
But he was an employee.
An IT guy. He was an employee, but more of like a foreman level rather than a manager.
Right.
I don't think he was the kind of person to whom the legislation was addressed. And in addition, I think that he's been working for the estate for a long time, and this is part of his work for the estate.
Right. But there are really two issues. One is, should I approve the agreement at all, given that he has been working for the 2 months already without getting the bonus or without even getting it approved? So query whether there is a need to pay him to retain him to stay since he has already stayed. But then second, even if I approve it, when should it be paid? I don't know why it would be paid on July 8 under any circumstances. It shouldn't be paid before he's done. So if he's done on July 20, that would be the time he would get his bonus for staying through, because I don't want to be in a position of having to get money back from somebody if they take the bonus and then skedaddle. But even assuming we could get by the timing of it, the question is, why should his administrative expense claim be paid in full while Mr. Atala's severance claim, which at a minimum is $75,000,
right.
And it may be more, why should that be paid pro rata with other administrative expense claims?
Well, I think that the key distinction is number one, Mr. Atala's payment truly is a severance payment as opposed to a retention bonus. The other issue, frankly, is that Edgar is providing ongoing services to the estate. He remains an employee. He really is the management on the ground who is, leading the effort to vacate.
That's because Mr. Atala got terminated. It's not his fault.
Well, Mr. Atala was, he was costing the estate a great deal more than Mr. Chacon. And so, yes, Mr. Atala was terminated when the business failed, but his role as CEO was effectively, there was no need for a CEO at that point.
But it's not like he walked away, is kind of my point. I mean, I don't know if you're trying to draw this distinction, but you seem to be saying that Mr. Chacon stuck around so we should reward him, and Mr. Atala didn't walk away. He got terminated by Mr. Calvert, but he was costing a lot more because you asked for permission to employ him. So I trust he got what he asked for.
I was
very reluctant to employ Mr. Atala for this reason. I called out these bonuses and severance and all that stuff, but I was told that the committee supported it.
And
now I'm told that may not be the case, but that's a matter for another day. But I'm sorry, Mr. Bailey, you were going to say something?
I would just point out that Section 503C doesn't make a distinction between retention bonus and severance package. They serve the same economic function. And if the trustee follows the court's guidance and makes the payment after Mr. Chacon has finished his work, then he is in exactly the same position as Mr. Atala.
If he pays it afterwards, but it's both the timing and the amount. Are you objecting to the amount?
No, I think the amount's reasonable, and
I think it should be paid in full on after he's done.
Yes.
Oh, so you're not saying it should be paid pro rata with your client?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I don't think my client should be paid pro rata either. I mean, that's obviously.
But the trustee does.
Yes. I don't understand how they can have both of those ideas in their mind at the same time without some kind of short circuit.
Well, that's kind of where I'm at here, because I mean the reason you are in favor of the full payment is that you're going to, if I order it, then when your client has his day in court, it's going to be at least $75,000, and I'm going to be hard-pressed, Mr. New, aren't I, to say I have to prorate Mr. Atala's severance pay.
I understand the argument, Your Honor.
Yeah. Are you going to be arguing that it should be prorated?
That is our position at this point.
How do you take those two positions?
Because there is a distinction, Your Honor, in that Edgar is providing ongoing services to the estate, and I think that is the key distinction.
But he won't be if I order this, and I'm not inclined to ever order a bonus before the services have been performed. So he will be in the same boat in that it won't be paid until after he's done. So at that point, there won't be any distinction. I mean, I'm having trouble getting past, notwithstanding Mr. Bailey and Mr. Atala's support for Mr. Chacon. We're 2 weeks away from him being done. And I what you've described and what I've described, see in the declaration, doesn't seem like he's doing much more than someone else who could come in and pack up boxes. Maybe he knows where dies and things are, but Ms. Baker is there, and she knows the dies, right?
Ms. Baker does know the dies, Your Honor. I think and maybe it didn't come across as forcefully in the declaration, but Edgar really is managing the process of winding up that facility. Mr. Calvert's not on the ground in Dayton. And so it does take somebody of more than just someone from Kelly Services packing up boxes. It's somebody to manage the skeleton crew that's there.
Okay. It's in the declaration, and I don't even know if Kelly Services exists anymore. But you all know what I mean.
Your Honor, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Calvert. And you do have in your declaration that he's the plant manager and has a wide array of duties. And Mr. Bailey, whose client, would know the importance of Mr. Chacon, seems to be echoing the comments. But so if you'd like to add to that, Mr. Calvert, you may.
It's been a very complicated wind down. I think Bill Atala fully understands the complications of Edgar. Edgar is the highest level and most knowledgeable person that was retained. He was the one that was the pinch hitter that could do anything from work on the computer systems to work on the auctions and dealing with it. I don't know if you know, but why after we sold the fixed assets, there was a subsequent auction at the site. and that subsequent auction required coordination, required removal of oil from hydraulic machines so they could be shipped out. There were a number of sophisticated issues. You had to have diverse experience and knowledge to be able to complete that. Edgar had considered other employment, and thus this matter arose under those circumstances.
Well, this is somewhat related, then. There was another auction, but the estate didn't. You didn't conduct it. Someone else did.
No, you're correct. Yeah. But it was on a facility
right.
in the site, and we had to control the issues around that site. And there was a number of issues associated right. with what was included and what was excluded. And we had to go back and make sure we reconciled all that and made sure nothing got out the door that was not properly sold in the first sale. So there was a number of issues.
I understand his importance, and I do agree. I guess my point with that last question is, was the estate paying him to help that auction, or was who covered those expenses?
No.
Okay.
The estate was making sure that we didn't have any assets disappear, have any assets walk out the door, have any security issues, and those types of things. And to be specific, Honor, we had those issues.
Sure.
We had people coming in trying to steal that had not bought the items in question.
Right.
So, and he was the one that caught them accordingly.
Okay. Seems though, and this is an unrelated matter, but that should have been on the buyer who conducted the auction, making sure there was security. The state shouldn't be paying for that, but neither here nor there. All right, here's what I'm going to do. I will approve the agreement. However, I'm not going to authorize the payment of the retention bonus until after Mr. Chacon's last day at work, and maybe paid the day after. But based upon the declaration of the trustee and Mr. Atala's counsel, it does appear that Mr. Chacon is providing valuable services, that if he was not promised this bonus, he may move to other opportunities, and the court finds that meets the standard under Section 503C3. So I will enter the order with that change. Mr. New.
Yes, I'll prepare an order.
Okay, and if you could just shoot it by Mr. Bailey.
Yes,
yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Anything further, Mr. Bailey?
No, Your Honor.
All right, you're free to go. All right, thanks. Why don't we next take the...
Your Honor, may I stay if I
may? You're free to go, but you're free to stay as well. Absolutely. Let's turn to the motion for authority to abandon. So Mr. Powers is here.
Good morning, Your Honor. Reagan Powers for Mr. Hansen. Ms. Wellman is also here from the Public Defender's Office.
All right, good morning. And your name is?
Jennifer Wellman.
All right, Ms. Wellman, of course I know you. Different context since I've last seen you. All right, Ms. Wellman, good morning. And you're representing?
Mr. Hansen
as well.
Case.
Okay. All right. And I did see what you filed, Mr. Powers. So, and Mr. New, you've stood up, but seems like, no, you're welcome to stand. It's your motion. But you saw what Mr. Powers filed. Does that seem to resolve things? Are we there?
Well, let me bring you up to speed. I've been working extensively with defense counsel and the Department of Justice, the U.S. Attorney. And we have come to an agreement with respect to the records that need to be preserved. So that 2009 forward,
okay.
Those paper records are being moved to a government warehouse up here in Seattle. So we're sorting through the issue of who's going to pay for what.
Right.
But at least we have an agreement that those documents are necessary for the criminal matter, and those are going to be preserved.
And also getting them out of Dayton. Primarily, that was
correct.
The other thing. And okay, so they're gonna be housed here, and do you have an agreement on who's paying for the moving and the storage and the like?
So we're in discussions on who's paying for the moving at this particular point. The storage, it's a government warehouse, so it's being footed by the government. So we're not.
Right.
And the other issue we're addressing right now is trying to work through preservation of the servers. And
right.
I think we can come to an agreement on
okay.
that, but that's not necessarily as time critical in terms of vacating the office, although we want to get it
right.
resolved sooner rather than later to cut off that expense. The remaining issue, frankly, is the pre-2009 record. So
okay.
Is Mr. Power's filing has indicated, Mr. Hansen says that he wants to take possession of those records.
Right.
And frankly, I think from the trustee's perspective, at this point, we just need them out of the warehouse, whether it's destroyed, whether he comes in and gets them. There's a timing issue, and I think there's a practical issue, too, in terms of we're talking hundreds of boxes of records. I don't know how Mr. Hansen plans on coming to the facility, getting these records, where he's going to take them, where he's going to store them. Seems logistically like it's not a possibility, and we just frankly need them out.
Right, but I mean, he says he's going to do it. I mean, the way to deal with it is you give him a deadline,
right.
and whether he does it or he hires Kelly Services, we'll stay with the theme, get somebody to get the boxes, and if he doesn't, you destroy them.
Right, and
how it's going to be. I'm not going to give him 6 months to do it. I'm going to give him a short time frame to do it, and that's how I plan to handle it, unless someone tells me otherwise.
No, and frankly, that's fine, Your Honor. I think that's what we were going to suggest if you were inclined to allow Mr. Hansen to have these records. I think we need in the order of a very short window. I don't know, the last date that you can have those out and have the facility clean and.
Your Honor, we're working on trying to be out by the 30th. We have certain washdown, i.e. pressure washing of dust and that type of thing. So the facility will become wet after the 20th. So we are washing things down and so on and so forth. So
that's not good for records.
No, that's the point, Your Honor.
Right.
We are very focused on trying to do our best to appease the landlord that we have done what we can to clean the facility accordingly. So as a result, we are shooting for the 20th being 100% out, subject to cleaning and drying and so on.
So 2 weeks from today, my math is correct.
Right.
All right. That's what you would like to be the deadline. Okay. Mr. Powers and Ms. Wellman, who would like to speak? All right.
Your Honor, the only issue we have is we have to get permission from the probation department for Mr. Hansen to travel down there. So I understand the need to be out by the 31st, but I think if Mr. Hansen could have till the 25th, they should be able to work around that. That would give him time to get approval.
You just heard what Mr. Calvert said.
I did, but well, yeah. I also heard there's still dyes in there that they haven't even noted up a sale yet. So I'm not sure how they're really going to be out by the 25th.
What I heard, and this is obviously there's nothing in the record yet on this, but I understand is they're going to have Metalcraft take possession of the dyes, so that's going to solve that problem. Is that right, Mr. New?
That's right. Exactly right.
They'll take possession pending approval of the sale,
and when does that happen?
It's in process as we speak. The dyes have already been packed, so they're already ready for a truck. It's just a matter of shipment. I have over 70-80% of them packed and ready to go and shrink wrapped. So I got the last 20% to go. We're still searching for a few dyes for customers. But we are looking at shipping out and being completely out of that building by the 20th. That is the day we need to bring in the cleaning services and so on.
Well, I would say, Your Honor, if the 23rd would be give him a weekend to do it. Presumably, they're not going to have the cleaning service in over the weekend. Just looking at the calendar.
That is not a correct presumption.
Yeah,
that would give him 10 days to wash it down.
Yeah. Well, your client's been itching to get this stuff forever.
Absolutely.
I'm going to give him 2 weeks.
The only issue is getting the probation department.
He doesn't even need to personally be there, does he?
I
mean, I know he'd like to be.
Yeah.
You know that I'm frustrated with this process, and it has been over 2 years where he's been itching to get stuff. He should have people lined up ready to go. This motion's been on the calendar for literally months. If he doesn't have arrangements made, he should be able to get him on Monday.
All right. Very well.
The 20th. If they're not up at the 20th, they're going to be wet.
Very well.
All right.
Just a point of clarification, Your Honor. I would like in the order, if they're not out by the 20th, then we have the authority to destroy
them. Well, that's, I was trying to be a little humorous. Right. Every now and then it fails. But yes, you have the authority to destroy them after the close of business or after 5 p.m. Pacific on July 20th if they've not been removed. If you could run that order by Mr. Powers.
Absolutely.
But it should be pretty vanilla, and I think your original order was fairly vanilla. Okay. By the way, is this all consistent with what Judge Jones has ordered? I'm assuming. I haven't seen the order. I know you referenced some docket numbers. I've not looked at them since they're not in the record. But
Ms. Wellman can address
okay.
that. The only other thing about that, Your Honor, is that the order should also provide that Mr. Hansen, if he is able to get approval to go down there, should be able to go into the facility. And I think that that's...
We have no problem with that at this time, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what happened in the federal case.
So. Okay, that sounds fine. And Ms. Wellman, anything you'd like to add?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
I agree with what Mr. New said about the process and what Mr. Powers has reflected in his status memorandum.
Okay.
We did not have the hearing yesterday because we are very close. The stipulations really reflect everything that Mr. Powers has stated to Your Honor. We struck it yesterday because of the cost issue with respect to transport and the government, because the government has agreed that this is, in fact, evidence that they want access to and will preserve. They can't simply agree to pay half of the cost of the transport. And that cost has been anywhere from $3,000 to $15,000. So I think Mr. New and the government need to work that out,
right,
and figure that out. My team was able to get into the warehouse, and they actually spoke very fondly of Mr. Chacon,
okay,
who was mentioned earlier.
All right, well, I'm glad
he was instrumental,
okay,
and apparently there were snakes and other things that they were not anticipating.
Okay.
But as soon as we have that cost, a stipulation will be presented to Judge Jones regarding the defense motion to prevent the spoliation of all of the records.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Wellman.
Yeah, just to add to that, Your Honor, that Brian Werger, the assistant U.S. attorney, is, I think there's an approval process he has to go through to get approval to pay any of the expenses. So he's doing that. I've been talking to him about,
okay,
you know, trying to figure out how who's going to pay for this.
All right. But we're going to get what needs to be preserved as far as the criminal proceeding is concerned. Is that right?
Okay. Absolutely. The
All
records
right.
as well as the servers.
Okay, good. And everything else is pre-2009 can be Mr. Hansen's going to get it. I know he's going to get him. And you'll work with cooperate with Mr. Hansen to make sure that he can
yes.
get the documents.
Yes. And right. and his personal effects, we've been trying to ship them up here, but he doesn't have we're having an issue of his ability to unload pallets from a truck, so perhaps he can pick those up at the same time as well.
Well, that's not going to be in this order.
Right.
It's going to be for you guys to work out.
Understood.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone. I'll look forward to that order. But everyone knows the 20th is our date, whether or not the order gets entered today or not. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Ryan.
Thank you, Ms. Wellman. Thank you, Mr. Powers. We've got a motion to sell property free and clear. Mr. Powers, you have filed a response to that. And then we have the motion to enforce the prior court order that Ms. Kaplan had filed and has been withdrawn, but the court is not satisfied. There are a number of concerns the court has, and it's going to address them. But I was going to take that next, but since I've got two other lawyers that I don't think are interested in that, why don't we take the sale motion next? Mr. New.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. So this is just a motion to sell just some miscellaneous remainder items. It's, you know, things. I think there's a couple of cars and microwaves and things like that. We did not receive any objection to the motion other than Mr. Hansen has asserted an interest in a machine gun camera, World War II era machine gun camera. The trustee is not, it's frankly not worth, you know, the time and effort to contest that particular issue. We did receive, Mr. Hamill is here representing Bradley Cohen.
And we did receive a writ of garnishment from Mr. Cohen's counsel, the company did, yesterday, garnishing specifically, I think there was a telescope and the machine gun camera that's at issue.
The telescope, which is supposedly owned by Mr. Hansen as well?
Correct. Okay. We're not asserting, I don't think the estate asserts any interest in that telescope.
Okay. All right. So there's no stay violation issue.
Right.
And I did see Mr. Hamill's request for language in the order. All right, Mr. Powers from Mr. Hansen.
Yeah. Thank you, Your Honor. And I just spoke with Mr. Hamill. I think the thing to do is just to have those two items excluded from their sale. That's what's on the calendar today. And
right.
The writ of garnishment process will proceed in state court if parties can't agree with it. So I think that one's fairly easily resolved.
I think that's straightforward for those issues. Mr. Hamill, anything you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor, it's Joe Hamill.
Yes, good morning.
It's pretty straightforward. We just don't want the order to say anything like give the items to Mr. Hansen. Just let the state court process proceed.
And that's fine. I mean, I think the order is going to say we're going to sell these assets and not include those two as these assets. Those two items as these assets.
That's perfectly acceptable, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, but I'm. Thank you, Mr. Hamill. I'm not quite ready to approve this, though. So what's the approximate fair market value or liquidation value or whatever value of the remaining items? That I got pictures of them, which was great. That was helpful. But what are we talking about here in terms of dollars?
So I'll defer to Mr. Calvert on that. You see the list. So it's right. You know, just miscellaneous things. There are a couple of vehicles. I don't know what the blue book value of those vehicles. Do you have an estimate of?
I'm just looking for just roughly what are we talking about here?
Just an opening comment on this. When we sold to Industrial Assets, we used the Murphy appraisal to identify all the major items. So these were other items that were not specifically identified. So I received an offer of $4,500 for the little Honda. But as for the other items, I cannot comment what a refrigerator sells for or what a microwave sells for or what some of those miscellaneous items sell for. It's just a matter of trying to carry out my fiduciary job to maximize the value. We thought we'd advertise in a local newspaper and see what interest there was. I can't tell you what the value is.
All right. Well, I mean, you're right. What's a used refrigerator worth? I mean, we've got a gun safe, a couple of vehicles, and then, you know, refrigerators and other microwaves. I can't imagine this stuff's worth a whole lot, which kind of leads me to the practical question is, how is this going to be worth your time selling these things individually? Are you going to put them on Craigslist?
Don't intend to. Plan to just run an advertisement, list the major items and say other, and see who comes to more of a garage sale type approach in front of the warehouse. Or actually in back of the warehouse where the security gates are. But there's very little left there, so it'll be whatever people want to pick over.
Okay.
I do have offers on a few of the major items, but haven't pushed those forward yet.
Right. I mean, it's the big ones I've just mentioned. It's the vehicles. I mean, and I say big, we're still 2006 Honda Pilot. We're not talking lots of money for anything here. I don't know what the year the Chevy truck is, but excuse me. The one thing that concerns me is that you want to give have the authority to pay Industrial Assets for assisting or finding buyers.
That was before when we were trying to get it into the auction, when they were having the auction. At this point, that's all done and over.
So just to clarify, I think we filed this motion before Industrial Assets had the second auction.
Okay.
It wasn't a second auction. It was the first auction.
First auction.
So you're no longer seeking that permission?
No longer seeking that. Our goal had been to, when they were auctioning it off, just add a few more lot numbers and let it go. Let the proceeds come across.
Right, because, I mean, that would have been, I mean, the other thing would do is just to sell it to them and the stuff to them and for a bulk amount and be done and not have to be bothered with the garage sale.
I tried that too, Your Honor.
And they're just not interested. Okay, all right. I mean,
and my biggest issue, Your Honor, is being out of the building by the end of the month for rent purposes. So I'm just trying to carry out my fiduciary job of liquidating these assets in the ordinary course, or properly, I guess.
So the proposed order would strike paragraphs 3 and 4. I mean, your order would strike paragraphs 3
exactly.
and 4. All right, so if you strike paragraphs 3 and 4 from your order, I will, I'll sign the order.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Let's then turn to the, and thank you, Mr. Powers, thank you, Mr. Hamill. You're free to go, and you're also free to stay. let's talk about the dyes in general, and you've actually addressed some of the issues that I needed to talk to you about, is where the dye is going to be, if they're in the process of being packed and sent to Metalcraft, who's in Wisconsin?
Green Bay?
Wisconsin. Yeah. I have a mild concern that custody and possession of estate assets are going somewhere else while there's currently disputes over the ownership. Let me ask, I've got the list of that you prepared, which I appreciate. The parties asserting an interest in the dies, and by my count, it's about 298 names on that list. We'll call it 300. Are you pulling the dies associated with those folks?
Yes, Your Honor. And I know Ms. Baker has been working exhaustively to try and resolve these issues. Those dies are being pulled. And frankly, Your Honor, you know, and Mr. Calvert can certainly correct me if I'm misstating the facts here. But, you know, the goal of this process has been to establish, you know, which dies the estate then has the ability to either sell or destroy. I don't.
Abandon. Your option is abandon.
Or abandon.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that at this point, you know, any customers who's assert an interest in a die, there's going to be a point where the trustee, frankly, is going to give them back for cost of shipping or turn them over for cost of shipping.
I was going to kind of ask if that was.
Yes.
You're about to say this, but I'll say it too. At some point when we're talking 298 names, it's maybe a few thousand dies.
It's certainly not worth the economic.
We've been focused on that a long time, Your Lord.
And I think we needed to go through the process just to see how many folks would assert an interest. Now we know 298 is not small, but out of 100,000 dies, how many dies is this 298 folks represent? Mr. Calvert, do you know?
Don't know, Your Honor.
Okay.
I would guess, Your Honor, it's a few thousand at most. Some of these customers, as I've looked at the list, some of them just have one die.
Right.
Some have 20 dies.
So. Right. But if the average was 10, we're talking 3,000.
Right.
Out of 80,000 to 100,000 dies, it would not appreciably affect the sale price.
Correct.
To metal. All right.
Correct.
We've got the 17th set aside, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but that you know, begs the question, do we even want to go through that process? Ultimately, I'm not going to order you to abandon them, but that's something I would like for you to consider, and it sounds like you are.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
We have made it clear that we will return dies for cost of shipping to any customer.
Okay.
So we have taken that action to allow us to be out by the end of the month.
All right. So, wait. So you can say that again?
we have taken the action to return dyes for cost of shipping.
Okay. So is it not your intention then to litigate at all or have any form of further proceedings with the 298 folks?
I don't think there will be any litigation. We've resolved our issues with Ms. Kaplan's clients.
Okay.
And that their dyes are being pulled and shipped for cost of shipping.
Okay.
And so, make a long answer short, I do not anticipate there will be litigation.
Okay.
We have one major problem we're still facing, and that is there's 30,000 galvans or plasters. And these are plasters that demonstrate the coin that will be made into a small coin.
Okay.
They are uninventoried.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to find 25 of them.
Because the owners of the dyes want the galvanos or whatever.
And I am galvanos.
Yeah.
I am searching.
Okay.
And it's taking upwards of literally to find one. It took a day and a half of labor to find one out of the 30,000. So that's the issue I'm faced with. I'm searching for 25, and I'm searching for them, and I'm trying to find them to return them, but I can't promise I can find them. I mean, you're searching through 30,000 pieces of plaster that are, you know, probably 18 inches to 25 inches in diameter.
Right.
And we'll resolve that with Ms. Kaplan, Your Honor, I think is.
Oh, right. So those are from Ms. Kaplan's clients.
Correct. They're the only ones who've asked for the galvanos that are associated with the dyes.
None of those names are on this list you provided, is that correct?
Well, I think some of them are.
Oh, okay.
No, they're not. I think either I can't recall if we created that list after we resolved it. That list, I think, is just the unresolved.
Right, as of a certain date, but names could come off the list day by day if you settle. So I assume this list is only going to go down and over time, at least the number of names will go down over time.
It'll go down to zero.
Okay.
One other issue, Your Honor,
yes.
And that is Betty Carey. I still don't have an address. I thought she might be here today.
Yeah,
I have the two drives and dyes in my briefcase right here, right now. Would love to find a place for them to go, safe and secure. But I'm ready to return them, but I don't have an address.
No contact information from her?
No, she has a blocked phone number. She, for her address, she'll put King County Bar Association's address or, fictitious address in Houston,
right.
Texas. So.
Right. Well, I appreciate you bringing them this morning. That was the right thing to do. She is not here. You've made an effort to try to get them to her. Obviously, you'll hold on to them at some point. You'll have to do something with the dyes. And there may be other dyes. Well, other dyes that for which no parties have come forward in asserting ownership interest and you plan to sell to Metalcraft.
Right.
And so it would be these two. Just hold them out. She'll show up at another hearing at some point. All right, though, but let's turn to what is a really unfortunate situation. And that was the motion that Ms. Kaplan filed, a motion to enforce a prior court order. Ms. Kaplan has withdrawn her motion, but the issues raised in that motion are quite serious. I'd like Mr. Smith from the U.S. Trustee's office to come on up and participate in this proceeding. So, Mr. Smith, you've read the motion, I assume?
I have, Your Honor.
All right. I've read the motion, my first day on vacation, an emergency motion for hearing. To say I was distressed would be an understatement. I've read the declarations filed by Mr. Calvert and Ms. Baker. She says that she had an understanding that the court had made a determination that the dyes belonged to the mint and that if a customer claimed ownership, the trustee could transfer title for $300. What her declaration doesn't explain is how did she reach this understanding? Could anyone fill me in on that?
you know, I did speak with Ms. Baker extensively, and I did ask her, did anybody tell you this information? Where did you get this information? And her explanation to me was that she was rushed, and that she wrote that email and sent it out just to kind of let people know that she would get to them when she got to them. So she did confirm for me that they did not, she was not told by Mr. Calvert or Mr. Wagner or anybody in authority that the court had made any determination regarding the ownership. She had indicated that it was her understanding that the Mint owned the dyes, and that this process was to transfer, which what she explained to me was her understanding was this process was to transfer title, which was not obviously correct.
Again, that would also be an understatement, because, I mean, she says what the court had already ruled, and what her declaration says, and what you've just said is that she literally just made that up on her own?
That is what she told me, Your Honor.
Your response says that the notice that was sent to the thousands of people and was published was crystal clear that the court had not made a determination. I agree it was crystal clear. I wordsmithed this. That's why this is so unfortunate, because I was so concerned that Mr. Calvert or someone on his behalf would say something unusual. Why was she not aware of the notice and the clear understanding that there would be a hearing in the future to determine ownership?
She certainly should have been, Your Honor. I don't have a good explanation for you.
My next question is she still employed? And I guess she is.
She is.
Is she still contacting customers regarding resolution of ownership of the dyes?
Only using an email that... I don't know if we attached it, but that was carefully reviewed and wordsmithed to make sure that it's clear that the court has made no determination. But she is the one who is in charge of that process. She knows where the dyes are. She's unfortunately returning the dyes it's not an easy task.
I know it's not an easy task, and I gather she's working very hard, but I'd be concerned that I had an employee that made something up out of whole cloth, which
Your
is
Honor,
what you're saying.
Your Honor,
yeah,
we've had weekly meetings on the closing of the company. We have a checklist of items that we're following to close the company. We specifically addressed this very clearly in those meetings that we did not, quote, own the dyes to resolve the ownership was the terminology discussed in the meeting with 10 other people. How the confusion occurred, I don't have a good answer. I know it's my responsibility. It is my responsibility. I feel it. Didn't look forward to coming to court. Didn't look forward to addressing that issue. Didn't look forward to finding the right way through it. It's wrong. It's just dead ass wrong. And I take it very personally. And it was a mistake. I don't have, let's just say, the highest educated people in the plant, but their hearts are in the right place. And I can tell you, I could put six other people on the stand that were in that same conference call that said, we don't own them, but she did do what she did. And I understand it's my responsibility.
I don't think anyone was looking forward to this hearing this morning, myself included. There's no easy way to say this. These are the elements of fraud. She made a statement that was false, that she knew or should have known was not true. No one, what you're telling me is no one told her it was true, to induce people to pay $300 to get their dyes back. And 11 people did. That's the elements of fraud committed 74 times. Well, the damage was only 11, but the fraudulent statements were made, fraudulent misrepresentations made on your watch, Mr. Calvert, happened 74 times. What do we do with this? And I guess maybe our prior conversation kind of answers that. It looks like we're not going to go forward with the hearing on the 17th. We're not going to litigate anymore. We're kind of winding down. I think just the cost-benefit analysis argument is a reason not to go forward with all this, but I'm concerned that this whole process has now been tainted. I don't know what else she said. If she says this crazy stuff in an email, what you're telling me is she made it up. What else has she said? Has anyone reviewed the rest of her emails to other parties?
We did not review them, Your Honor. We did go back and confirm that she had communicated it approximately 74, 75 times. We then went back and reached out to those players or those customers, advised them that that was wrong. We then refunded the money to the people in question. So I think the missing element of fraud is intent. And I think from that perspective, that's in your court. Nobody else can determine intent. Right. But from that perspective, I don't believe she had intent. If she had intent, I would have fired her. But I think we did what we could do to correct the situation, and we corrected it as timely as we learned it. And that's all I can share.
Well, I mean, intent, usually no one admits it. It's usually inferred, and it's pretty easy to infer from this letter. The court has determined the Mint owns the dyes, and you need to pay $300 if you want the dye. It's intended to generate a $300 return. I don't know how it could be any clearer. Now, this is not the day where I'm going to be making any findings of fraud, but this is as distressed as I've been in 3 years plus on the bench, because it's not only a fraudulent statement, but it's a fraudulent statement attributed to this court. And I know, Mr. New, Mr. Calvert, you're unhappy. But there needs to be something done. I don't know what that is at this point, but I want to see what she said. So I want to see all her emails. Since the motion's been withdrawn, there's nothing technically on the calendar. So I'm going to do a show cause order that will require the trustee to appear on the court on July 27 at 9:30 and show cause why the court should not take further action, including without limitation imposing sanctions on appropriate parties to remedy the improper and inaccurate statements to dye customers. By no later than July 20, I would like, well, I'm ordering that the trustee file declarations that attach copies of the following. I want all communications with the 11 customers described in Mr. Calvert's declaration who received refunds of their settlement payments, including any letters that accompanied any checks. I would like to see all emails and other communications from Jennifer Baker to any customers, and any emails and other communications from any customers to Jennifer Baker relating in any way to resolving the disputes over ownership of any dyes, and to include all attachments referenced in all emails and other communications. And I will make a decision as then where we go from there. With regards to the initial omnibus hearing that is set currently for July 17, and that was part of the notice that went out, I gather from our discussion that you're not inclined to go forward with it, and I wasn't going to go forward with it in any event because of this issue. But I think we need to let people know that somehow, right? And so what I look for you, Mr. New, Well, let's talk about this for a second. Do you in any way intend to go forward with an initial omnibus hearing or any further hearing with respect to the 298 folks?
I believe the answer is no, Your Honor.
Okay.
Planning to return them or in the process of returning. Okay. So
I don't, we need to let people know that so they can not have to worry about the 17th anymore. So my first react or what I planned before I heard what you said this morning was just to say that we're going to strike it and there'll be future notice. But it sounds like if you just want to strike it, there will be no further hearing. Something along those lines. But I just need some sort of ex parte order to approve the form of the notice to go to the remaining folks who have asserted a die ownership. And so they can take care of, or they don't, they need not worry about what happens on July 17th. Does that make sense, Mr. New?
That makes sense, Your Honor.
Just want to get some communication to them.
Right.
And the sooner we can do that, the better. That's what I got this morning. So we'll get that show cause order, but you can start getting the declarations together,
emails
together. Mr. Smith, anything further?
I guess I just have a question. So the order on the show cause hearing, it'll only be by declaration. You're not requiring Ms. Baker to appear.
I'm not sure I can compel her to be here. I'd like to see her, but I'm not sure I can compel her. So at this point, the show cause hearing is going to just be on the declarations. The declarations don't have to necessarily be from Ms. Baker. The emails belong to the estate. So, someone from K&L Gates can review the emails. It's probably preferable that someone from K&L Gates does the review and gets me the stuff. So Mr. New or someone else from your office would be the better ones to prepare the declarations. Okay. Did you have any other questions, Mr. Smith?
I don't.
Okay. All right. Anything further on Mint? All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
I think I'm going to take a short recess. All right. We're going to take a short recess. We're going to take a recess till 11, and we'll take the TOC matters at that point. And the TOC matters are compensation applications and then the sale motion. We'll see everyone at 11.
All rise.